Coming up on Golf Today, Patrick Cantlay has a new man on the bag, and it's Joe LaCava. But what does that mean for Tiger Woods and his outlook for the rest of the season? When will we see the big cat again? And the Kiwi Stephen Auker is going to say hello once again, this time after a heartfelt win in Houston. Find out why this one was so meaningful and why his golf is so good. And the president of Quail Hollow, Johnny Harris, will visit on the eve of the Wells Fargo Championship. We are taking you to the Queen City on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Golf Today on a Wednesday. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch, Golf Week Magazine. We're on the eve of the Wells Fargo Championship, the Queen City of Charlotte. I tell you what, this is a golf tournament that's been around for two decades. It feels like it's been around for 200 years. It just fit right into the schedule, became big immediately. It's a designated event this week.
Yeah, even when it was the Wachovia Championship two decades ago, it seemed to attract the best field of this kind of springtime on the PGA Tour year in, year out. Certainly no different now when it's a designated event. And for all of this talk about who's not appearing at designated events, John Rahm and Scottie Scheffler are not here this week. They're taking the week off, but there's certainly no shortage of star power.
Looking forward to a conversation with the president of Quail Hollow, Johnny Harris, in just a little bit. Here's what you need to know. On this Wednesday, the Wells Fargo Championship returns to Quail Hollow this year after hosting the President's Cup last fall. You might remember it is one of 17 designated events on the PGA Tour this season. Coverage begins tomorrow, 2 p.m. Eastern, right here on Golf Channel. Check out that green mile. Strong field as usual in Charlotte. Six players in the top 10. Past champions Rory McIlroy and Max Homa. UCLA Bruin Patrick Cantlay among them as well. And speaking of Patrick Cantlay, check this out, folks. Big news this week surrounding the eight-time PGA Tour winner, as Joe LaCava will be on his bag for the foreseeable future, beginning with this week's Wells Fargo Championship. All of Cantlay's career wins on the PGA Tour came with his previous caddy, Matt Minister, on the bag. With more on this news, let's welcome in Todd Lewis from Quail Hollow. Todd, what more can you tell us?
Well, this is not the first time that Patrick Cantlay and Joe LaCava have worked together. You go back to the 2021 Northern Trust. Joe filled in for that event. It was just a one-off, but now he has a full-time gig as Patrick Cantlay's caddy. Now, Patrick decided to part ways with Matt Minister, affectionately known as Rev out here on the PGA Tour, after the Zurich Classic. So Patrick needed a caddy, and he was eyeing Joe LaCava, who is not working a lot, obviously, with Tiger right now due to his injuries and his recent surgery. So they had a conversation, and then Joe LaCava had to have a conversation with Tiger, and Tiger gave his blessing for LaCava to go work with Patrick Cantlay. Now, Patrick Cantlay was in the media center today, and he was asked about it from his perspective, what the process was like.
Yeah, I mean, I've been friends with Fred Couples a long time. He's been in Newport Beach for a number of years now, and we've played a lot of golf together, so I've heard a number of great things about Joe. And when I reached out to Joe, he said it was possible and ended up working out, and I'm really happy about it.
Did you speak to Tiger at all about it, or?
I haven't spoken to Tiger.
And then what was the decision process like with Rev? Why did that, you guys had obviously a ton of success together, is it just needing a new voice?
Yeah, we accomplished a lot together, and I'm really proud of all we accomplished. He's a great friend of mine, and we had a lot of good finishes together and a lot of wins. And so I'm incredibly grateful to him. Just needed a change.
I know you've worked with Joe before, but in the small sample size that you have working with him, what do you already see that he can contribute to your game?
Yeah, he's just a steady hand on the steering wheel, and I know he's been in every moment a caddy could be in, and he's just a good guy, and so I've enjoyed the limited time that I've spent with him, and feel confident that we'll be a good team out there.
Now, I walked with Joe LaCava and Patrick Cantlay today during the Pro-Am, and I spoke with Joe about making the adjustment from Tiger Woods, who he's been with for nearly 12 years, to Patrick Cantlay. He said the adjustments have been pretty minimal. He says that He's got a pretty good grasp of the way Patrick plays, but he's still learning a lot more about Cantlay's game, and he's learning more about Patrick Cantlay as the person, too. They went to dinner last night together, trying to form that chemistry, much like what he and Tiger had. Now, LaCava also told me that Tiger Woods is a friend to him, like a brother to him, and he could not have been better in regards to this situation. He said that Tiger wants the best for me, and that's why he endorsed his move to Patrick Cantlay. And I also talked to Mark Steinberg in regards to Tiger Woods and his eventual hopeful comeback to playing on the world stage. He says still right now, no timetable. Of course, he had that ankle fusion surgery recently. He said we're waiting for that surgery to take. We're resting and going through rehab, and then we'll make a decision as to when he'll come back after that. Guys?
Todd Lewis with all the news on this Wednesday from Quail Hollow, Charlotte, North Carolina. So, Amy, let's take a look at this Tiger Woods-Joe LaCava relationship over about a dozen years. They won 12 events together, the 2019 Masters, obviously the high point, but also the Players' Championship in 2013. Amy, Jim Bones McKay back in 2009 told Golf World that Joe LaCava is the best caddy on the PGA Tour. That is high praise. So who is Patrick Cantlay getting on his bag?
He's getting the best possible option out there. And it's not as though he didn't have a good caddy. Matt Minister was widely respected on the PGA Tour as a great caddy, but these relationships tend to run their course, and sometimes they resurrect themselves, sometimes they don't. We've seen it with several players over the last couple of years. Shane Lowry most recently parted ways with Bo Martin, his caddy. But any player is going to be lucky to have Joe LaCava. I mean, Cantlay basically summed him up perfectly there when he said that he's a steady hand on the wheel, which is really what you're looking for. You're not looking for an emotional guy standing next to you in tense situations. And Joe LaCava has proven that, not just being with Tiger Woods, because a circus doesn't get any bigger than the one that follows Tiger around the golf course. But he's got experience with very different personalities. Dustin Johnson, Tiger Woods, Fred Couples, they're all very different personalities out there, and Cantlay is his own personality as well. I just hope Joe has an electric cattle prod once in a while that he can move Cantlay along a little bit. But in fairness, the reality is caddying for Tiger isn't a full-time job anymore.
Yeah, no doubt. And Joe LaCava on the bag for Fred Couples in 92 when he won the Masters, and he was the rock star on the PGA Tour.
But what do you think this says about Tiger's future schedule, though?
You know, listen,
outside of the injury, just in terms of it being a job.
Well, I'm no doctor. I was on the Johns Hopkins website earlier. The ankle fusion that he had, that Tiger had, typically around 3 months. You're not supposed to put any weight on the foot at all. Now, we know that Tiger doesn't always follow doctor's advice, hashtag 2008 U.S. Open, but it tells me that to think that Tiger will come back this season for the major championship schedule is going to be a very difficult ask at this age, at this body state of life that he is in. I think the most important events for Tiger over the last couple of years have been the Masters Tournament and have been the Old Course, the 150th Open at St. Andrews last year. Oak Hill, L.A. North would be great. He's from Cypress, California. Hoy Lake, he won there in 2006. But to think he can somehow rehab and then put his body back together to compete with Jon Rahm and Scottie Scheffler, I don't see it personally. Tiger obviously often has other ideas, but it just is a reminder that we're much closer to the end than the beginning. And to say, you know, goodbye to Joe LaCava, give him his blessing as he goes to work for one of the best players in the world, and Patrick Cantlay, tells me that the Tiger is going to take some time probably to get his body as right as it can be.
And assuming that LaCava and Cantlay, in this sort of variable world of caddy-player relationships, assuming they're still together when Tiger does make that comeback, what do you think, Charlie's old enough to leave that bag around now?
You never know. I mean, we're going to talk.
It's not going to happen anytime soon, I think.
Talk to Ray Floyd Jr. in a bit. He caddied for his old man at the Masters Tournament. So you never know who might be next up for Tiger Woods. But hopefully Tiger gets healthy at his own pace and doesn't come back too soon, which so many athletes do across sports.
Well, I don't think he's going to lack applicants for the job whenever it comes. Well, this guy authored the most emotional win of the weekend, Stephen Altker. After the break, he's going to join us to explain the backstory of his victory at the Insperity Championship. Stay with us.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Welcome back to Golf Today. In 2022, Stephen Altker won the Insperity Invitational for his third career win on the PGA Tour Champions. At the time, the win marked the second in his previous three starts. Well, on Sunday, he won the Insperity Invitational for a second straight year,
closing with a 6-under par 66 for a four-shot victory. And it was his first title of the year. Auker's former caddy, Sam Workman, was from the Houston area. He last caddied for Auker in January before being diagnosed with cancer. He sadly passed away about a month later. After the win yesterday, Auker spoke about the emotion of the moment.
It's huge. You obviously see the emotion on 18 there. But I just saw a sea of orange today, and just reminded me of Sam. I mean, I had my son on the bag. I mean, doesn't get any better than that.
A lot of things, as you mentioned, between Sam and here in Houston, your son Ben on the bag. Last year, you beat Steve Stricker by four shots. You beat him by four shots today. Last year, you shot 31 for 66, the final round. You did the same today. Do you feel like maybe there's some connection spiritually or something there for you, a special week?
Quite possibly. As I said, this nine obviously has been great to me. So just the whole week's been amazing. The support from everybody and especially the Orange Brigade out there. So, I couldn't ask for more. It's been fantastic.
And here is the sea of orange that Stephen Auker mentioned. Sam Workman's family and friends. He was a huge fan of the Houston Astros, and they donned the colour and followed Stephen Auker around as a show of support on Sunday. And we're pleased now to be joined by Stephen Auker. And Stephen, you've had some emotional victories in your career, but it's hard to imagine that any are going to top this one.
Yeah, this was a good one. Obviously the situation having to defend and with Sam's army there, if you like, it was pretty special. And and obviously to finish the way I did too, Stricker was hunting me down pretty good. So it's always nice to get the W in the way I did and where it was extra special.
Stephen, what did you love about Sam the most?
Sam, obviously, very loyal guy. I mean, the guy was never late. that's the sign of a good caddy for a start. But Sam was, it was very calm. He was very easygoing. I think we're kind of similar personalities in a way. But, whether I was shooting 80 or 65, the guy was the same, had the same attitude. Had a passion for the game. He taught and he played, and he understood it. So, that's that always helps, especially in tough situations. You're coming down the heat of the battle. You're trying to get a win, and that always helps. So, and just end up being a good mate too. That always helps. We enjoyed spending time together on the golf course and at times off it, and just love being around his family and friends as well, that we became very close.
Speaking of his family and friends, the aforementioned Sea of Orange who were supporting you on Sunday, it would have been very easy for all of that to become, while it is a comfort, to become a distraction as well. How did you manage to keep your focus on the job at hand during that kind of emotion?
Yeah, it was a tough final nine. And, I just had to keep catching myself and get me back into the here and now and keep playing and keep focusing on just trying to win a golf tournament. So I guess in a way it actually helped me to focus a little bit more. I would get away, go to another place sometimes, thinking about other things and just to pull me back and get me back in the right place. And that's what Sam would have done, said something or just a little trigger that would have said, okay, come on, let's get back in this and let's get the job done. So, yeah, if anything, it actually helped.
Stephen, you had your son Ben on the back. Kids don't always listen. Yeah. What'd you ask of your son for the week?
Well, it was the first time in competition, that is. I mean, we'd done some casual rounds together and he knew the drill. He's seen me play enough and what goes on. But I think for him to see, kind of what goes on, down the stretch, being in position to win a golf tournament, I think he kind of realised, well, there's a bit more to it than just caddying and carrying a bag and me hitting a golf ball, So, I think he appreciated being in that situation. And we had a good time. I could tell he was nervous. The first, on Friday, the first day, he didn't want to mess up. But I said, if you go out with attitude, you're gonna mess up. It's like a golfer. If you think you're gonna play bad, you're gonna play bad. So, We just loosened it up at the weekend. We chatted a bit more. He had some more input. And it was a great father-son experience.
Well, one thing he didn't forget was to take that flag on the 18th hole when the old man had won the title. Stephen, you've played 38 PGA Tour Champions events. You've been in the top 10 31 times, 6 wins. Are you still pinching yourself out there of what's going on?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, you still look around and you still... I see who I'm playing with and the field we have and the Hall of Famers and major champions. Yeah, for sure. You still look around. You're still trying to learn something. You're still not comfortable. I don't want to be comfortable. I'm not comfortable being comfortable. So, it's a good position to be in, just to feel that way. And, pinch myself, a little bit. Sometimes, at the end of the year, I sit down and, hey, I won the Schwab Cup. I won, 4 times. That was a heck of a year. So, this reflection time and this playing time and focus time and, that reflection time is a little bit kind of pinch-worthy, I guess, if you like. It's been a fun ride.
Well, Stephen, by winning the KitchenAid Senior PGA last year, you get to play in the PGA Championship for the very first time at Oak Hill. You want some discomfort. You're going to have it in a couple of weeks. What are you most looking forward to?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. You know what? I've just been doing some homework this week on the golf course, seeing some videos, looking at the new renovations they've done and the new holes and the greens. And I'm excited. I said to my wife this morning, I'm excited about playing the PGA. And I was interviewed last week about playing the PGA in Oak Hill. And I don't know much about it, but I'm not going in with too many expectations. I'm just going to go and play my game, see how it stands up. Hopefully it's the type of golf course and it looks like it. You got to drive it well and iron plays at a premium. And obviously, short game, everything's got to kind of be on. So I think with what I did last weekend at the Insperity, just a little bit of confidence builder and just kind of build on the game the next couple of weeks, the regions next week, and just kind of build up to Oak Hill a little bit. That'll be I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, congrats on the win in Houston. I know it meant a lot to you and your family. Best of luck the rest of the season. Bring a jacket to Oak Hill. We'll speak to you down the road.
All right. Fantastic. Thanks, guys.
Back on Golf Today. A reminder, the stars and the dreamers in the women's game will head to the Monterey Peninsula Pebble Beach for the 78th U.S. Women's Open July 6th through the 9th. And speaking of stars, folks, some big news. Yesterday, the 10-time major champion, Annika Sorenstam, announced she's accepted a special exemption into this year's event. And what a history she has with the U.S. Women's Open. Why not? She's a 3-time winner, 95 at the Broadmoor, 96 at Pine Needles. In 2006, kind of a bolt from the blue, Newport Country Club, and she will be at Pebble Beach along the Monterey Peninsula.
Well, on a good day, Damon, it's about 5 hours down the 101 from Pebble Beach to Los Angeles Country Club, which will play host to the 123rd U.S. Open, June 15th through 18th. And sticking with the U.S. Open, let's take a little flashback down memory lane. All the way back to 1986, Shinnecock Hills. The leaderboard in that final round was more crowded than L.A. traffic, but Raymond Floyd finished 2 strokes clear of Chip Beck and Lanny Watkins to win his 4th and final major title. The victory marked Floyd's only U.S. Open championship win.
Well, speaking of Floyd, Eamon, check this out. Raymond Floyd Jr. made it through U.S. Open local qualifying last week in Norwalk, Connecticut, Shorehaven Country Club, not far from Golf Channel HQ, able to make it through. Now, Floyd Jr. is the son of the 4-time major champ and World Golf Hall of Fame member Raymond Floyd, and is also caddy for his old man in the Masters. Raymond won back in 1976, and I believe you have Ray on this Wednesday. Congrats on making it through local radio. Some guys are grinding in the weeks and months ahead. Some guys take like a laissez-faire attitude. What was your approach to local qualifying?
Well, the only reason I kind of signed up for it is I had qualified for the U.S. Mid-Am last year, and I was exempted to a bunch of stuff locally. So I wanted to get a competitive round under my belt. And a bunch of guys I work with, I just live down the street from Shorehaven in Old Greenwich, Connecticut. A bunch of guys I work with are members, and I played the course a bunch, and I love it. So I went out there. It was my third round of 18 this year, and something clicked, and I played fantastically, went around and one under with just 2 3-putt bogeys. So it was really, I didn't really prepare for it other than chipping and putting, and that's what paid off.
Ray, I've read that you describe golf as your hobby. I guess there was a time when it was kind of your business. When did that change transfer when it became a hobby and you retained your amateur status?
Well, when I got out of Wake Forest, I turned pro. I went down to South Africa and played, tried to get through Q school, which I didn't, and was fortunate to be playing golf with a guy who got me some interviews on Wall Street, and I still played pretty competitively. Made it through local when I was much younger, almost made it to the actual U.S. Open in 2003. But as my career in Wall Street and my life progressed, having 4 daughters now, my golf did become a hobby, and I try to fit in competitive stuff whenever I can. And this was the case. You know, the guys here at Piper Sandler, where I work, were nice enough to give me some days off and are pretty good with my golf and was able to go up there and qualify. So I would say that transition really probably started 2010 or so when I started to have way too many kids.
Well, Ray, I believe your dad won the Masters 2 years after you were born. He was on the Live From set with Steve Sands this year. There's a statue of your old man at the Augusta Airport. You literally grew up at Augusta every spring, and you blogged about it a little bit back in the day. What was that like for you as a kid going year after year?
It was always a very special thing to go there. And as I got older, it really kind of hit home how special a place that it was as I understood and learned more and more about golf. It always worked out great for me in school as well because our spring break was always the week after during Hilton Head. So I would always go to the Masters. My parents would pull me out of school, and then I had spring break. So I got 2 weeks off of school instead of one. So it was it was always a lot of fun. But as, you know, my brother and I got older, you know, I was able to caddy for Dad in 4 different Masters, including his last one in 09. And I think back in 03 or 04 when he made the cut, which was extremely fun as well. And caddy for him still in the par three when he goes about playing that. So the Masters, I haven't missed one except the COVID year in 2020 since I've been on, you know, the earth, and it's my favorite week of the year, period.
Now, competitors don't come any flintier than your old man, Ray. Are you going to take some advice from him before you head into this final qualifying for the U.S. Open?
Oh, absolutely. I will, I gave him a call before the local. You know, he just said go out there, and, you know, his advice to me as a pretty good golfer was essentially, if it looks like you're going to make a bogey, make sure that's the worst score you make. So that was kind of, my mantra. Just go out there, have fun. I wasn't expecting much because I hadn't played a lot of golf. And, I did get in trouble a couple times, and I took that strategy, and it paid off. So I will definitely be in his ear. Obviously, on June 5th, it's a very long day, 36 holes. I'm going to try to get in the gym a little bit before that because it can be hot up here in this area in June. And, go in. I'll probably just work on my short game. You know, that's what, my dad told my oldest daughter who plays on the golf team, just work on your short game. Everything else will fall into place. So I'm going to put some time into that and try to lose a couple pounds before I'm walking 36 holes. And, somebody's got to go from there. So it might as well be me.
Ray, your dad has one of the great stairs in the history of sports. In fact, it's called the stair. It's like a Mark Messier level stair. How often have you been at the end of the stair?
Oh, way too much, especially when I was a child. My brother and I were good kids, but not all the time. But man, when we screwed up, we got that stare. He always says he could never induce it. If he could, he would always induce it because he's never kind of lost a tournament with it. But I can tell you what, my brother and I could make him induce that stare on the spot.
Ray, being the son of a highly accomplished man in a particular field, and you're in the same field, can't always be easy, and it certainly wasn't for the kids of Jack Nicklaus or Gary Player who tried to make it as professional golfers. Was that an extra pressure or scrutiny for you that you could have done without?
I mean, listen, my dream was always to be a pro golfer and fall into my dad's footsteps. There definitely is that added pressure. You're always going to get compared to your father. I get it 100%. But what I say now, fast forwarding, is sure, maybe it was detrimental to my golf game, but being the son of Ray Floyd has had way, way more benefits than, you know, any sort of detriment. So I'm extremely lucky that Ray Floyd was my dad, and more importantly than what dad was professionally and as a golfer, he was and is the, you know, the best dad. I mean, he's just absolutely awesome. So, you know, what he's been able to teach me and my brother, not just about golf, but and my sister, and not just about golf, but in life, I wouldn't trade it in for the world. There's been just so many benefits being the son of Ray Floyd, the person.
Ray, you mentioned that at least one of your girls play. I don't know how many. What lessons are you sharing with them?
I'm really just trying to teach us. My oldest daughter's in high school. She plays on the JV team here at Greenwich High School in Connecticut. I'm just trying to teach her to have fun. It's a game, and I'm glad she's gotten into it because golf is, you know, one of the few sports you can play lifelong. It's a great business tool as well. So I'm just trying to teach her to have fun. I'm letting the pro at our club kind of give her the lessons, and then I'm working on her with, you know, short game. I know how I swing. I can't teach the swing. I've never been a teaching pro, but I know enough about the short game through my grandfather and obviously my dad, where I'm going to help her with that. So that's kind of, but really just more to have fun and what a great tool golf is, you know, down the road and in life.
Ray, this was a lot of fun. Best of luck in final qualifying. Hope to speak to you soon.
Thank you guys so much for having me on. Have a great day.
Well, sticking with US Open qualifying, Matt Kuchar, as of now, still must go through final qualifying for LA Country Club, and he has family for company. His 15-year-old son, Cameron, will also be teeing it up on golf's longest day after advancing through his 18-hole local qualifier Monday in Wellington, Florida. The young Kuchar is a class of 2026 recruit who has teamed up with his dad at each of the past three PNC championships. He shot a 3-under par 69 with a bogey on his last hole to finish second and earn one of the final qualifying tickets. Well, a couple of weeks ago, Willie Mack is playing this week in the PGA Tour designated event at the Wells Fargo Championship. He comes from the college ranks to the mini tours, to the Corn Ferry Tour, and now to the PGA Tour over the last 15 years. We're going to hear his amazing story next. Well, so much of the focus at this week's Wells Fargo Championship will be on the Rorys and the Justins and the Jordans, but there are a couple of feel-good stories to be found elsewhere at Quail Hollow. Alejandro Tosti and Willie Mack are two long shots who played their way into the field at this $20 million designated event. They're here to tell their stories as Golf Today rolls on.
Golf Today.
And the PGA Tour back at Quail Hollow for this week's Charlotte, North Carolina Wells Fargo Championship. And you can catch live first round coverage tomorrow, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Golf Channel. And the field, strength to strength. Six players in the top 10, 33 of the top 50, got 92 PGA Tour winners. And 18 major champs, myself and Amy Lynch are not among them, but this is Golf Today. Hope your Wednesday is going well. And we're going to speak to the likes of Willie Mack III and Alejandro Tosti. It's great to make it onto this PGA Tour event, but man, what a venue to go. The Green Mile suffers no fools. You have to bring your best.
And this really does cut to the heart of the whole debate going on about the field sizes, particularly in these designated events, because the very nature of sport is the Cinderella story, this kind of David and Goliath dynamic. And there are a few Davids in the field of Goliaths this week, and they add texture, they add value to a tournament, and hopefully by the weekend they can add some drama.
The slingshots and the rocks better be strong for the Goliath that is Quail Hollow Club. And we do have some stories to feel good about on this Wednesday. Yes, Alejandro Tosti played his college golf at the University of Florida. Go Gators, you might say, was medalist in the 2017 SEC Championship. First joined PGA Tour Latino America in 2019, and in 2022, that's last year, made 10 cuts in 12 starts to earn his Korn Ferry Tour card. Now, last week in the Mexico Open, Tosti fired a final round 64 to finish tied for 10th. That finished good enough to earn him a spot in Charlotte. And after the round, Alejandro met the media.
I mean, I know top 10 gets you into the next week. I'm not worried about it. If it's meant to happen, it's going to happen. And I'm happy that I'm able to have the opportunity to show my game in this level. This is only my third start. And I mean, I know I have a lot to improve, but I know I belong to this level.
Well, that top 10 did indeed get him into the field of the Wells Fargo Championship. He goes off at 9:02 a.m. Eastern Time tomorrow with Willie Mack and Austin Greaser. And we're pleased now to be joined by Alejandro Tosti. And Alejandro, this is clearly a big event for you this week. What's it like being out there surrounded by the best players in the world on that driving range?
Hello, guys. Thank you for having me. And it feels pretty cool to be on the range. Yesterday, I had Jason Day and Jordan Spieth hitting balls behind me, and it felt pretty special. I got to play nine holes with Shane Lowry and a couple other guys, and it was fun too. So I'm very excited to be here, have another opportunity to improve my game.
What do you learn playing with a Shane Lowry or watching a Jordan Spieth or a Jason Day?
Well, I only got to see them at the course, but with Shane Lowry, we had a couple strategy conversations and where to hit the balls. He has played here before, obviously, and this is my first time, so it was pretty cool to go out and have someone that's been playing at this place. So that was pretty much. It was fun to see different lines that they took in certain holes and different places to where to put the ball. The greens are rolling perfect and fast. It was windy yesterday. It's windy today, but hopefully it will slow down for the next 2 days and be able to shoot a good score.
Alejandro, you are the bubble boy on the Korn Ferry Tour right now. There are 30 cards at the end of the year. You're 30th in the points list. Did that give you any pause about taking weeks off to play the PGA Tour, or are the potential rewards just too good to pass up?
Exactly. This week we don't have it, but last week an event that I left high, but I mean, the experience that I earned last week, just a boost of confidence, and I have another opportunity this week.
Alejandro, you like shot up some 20 spots to get that T10 at the Mexico Open, shooting that 64. What was your mindset before the final round?
Well, I started the tournament well, and I had an OB. The second day was not good enough. I was happy that I made it. And then on Saturday, it was a very slow day. The whole day, I was actually over for the day. And I said to myself, if I play from now on 10 under, I'm going to have a chance to top 10. And I ended up eagling my hole, bringing the round back to even par. And then played 7 under the next day. So I was one shot shy of my goal, the 10 under from where I proposed myself, and it ended up being good enough to be here this week, so I'm very happy.
Now, Alejandro, we've seen some weird warm-up routines on the range in this game, but the PGA Tour put out a video last week of you using a device on the range. It looked as though you were trying to do some kind of eye warm-up exercise. What exactly were you doing here?
So right there, I'm paying attention to a very little symbol, and I'm using my eyes to diverge my. So with our eyes, we're pointing with the two different eyes. We're pointing to one spot, and I'm trying to get my eyes coordinated, and I use it by getting it closer and further away from me, following it, very focused. And it also I implement some breathing techniques, and this helped me to get in my mental zone and my focus over the ball.
Whatever it takes to get the job done.
I need one of those things. I'll try anything at this
make
point.
Make it a double. Alejandro, thanks for the time. Best of luck in Charlotte this week.
Thank you so much for having me, and I hope to be here again.
All right, from one great story to another, Willie Mack III has a story in golf that goes back to 2006 when at Bethune-Cookman at HBCU, he won 11 times in college before becoming the first African-American to win the Michigan Amateur Championship in 2011. Mack proceeded to spend the better part of the next decade bouncing around mini tours across the country before he earned his Korn Ferry Tour card last fall. And this tweet from Monday Q, he put this out. Willie Mack III played 27 holes on Sunday at the Korn Ferry Tour event in Alabama, jumped immediately in his car, drove 6 hours to the Wells Fargo Monday qualifier, arriving after midnight, no practice round, shot 65, and will play for a $20 million purse this week. Now that is grinding. I'm taking a look at that grind. Now 34 years of age, he's made 6 PGA Tour starts. This will be number 7, made a couple of cuts and earned that Korn Ferry Tour status this year via Q School in the 2021 APGA Tour Player of the Year. And Willie joins us now. Willie had quite the weekend, 27 holes Sunday in Alabama. You drive the 6.5+ hours to Monday qualify, which you do. I want to know how you spent that 6.5 hours. Who'd you call? What music did you listen to pass the time?
It was just me and my brother. He's been caddying for me on the Korn Ferry Tour this year, and I wasn't actually even going to drive up. We played 27 holes on Sunday because the Korn Ferry Tour event got shortened to 54 holes, so I actually was just going to go home on the way, and then I just kept going, and luckily I did, and I'm here this week, and hopefully I can make it an opportunity that I can't pass up.
Well, hopefully you get a reward for keeping driving north on the highway there. You posted a couple of good rounds in the last couple of weeks on the Korn Ferry Tour. Willie, what made you keep driving? Was it the feeling that you had a good round in you, or was the potential reward of playing a designated event just too good to pass up?
I think because I've been playing well the last 2 weeks. I haven't got off to a good start this year. I was having some equipment issues with my driver and putter, but I actually switched out to a new putter and driver 2 weeks ago, and I feel like that was the key to me playing well the last 2 weeks on the Korn Ferry Tour. And when I got in, I actually didn't know it was a designated event. So just knowing it's another opportunity for me to get out on the PGA Tour and show off my skills, hopefully I can do that this week.
Willie, you shot 65. In Monday qualifying, you've done this for a long, long time, but what are the nerves like when you're continuing to chase these opportunities in professional golf?
Yeah, I feel like this is a little different because I went out and actually earned a spot here, unlike the exemptions I got. But every opportunity I have to get into a PGA Tour event, it means the world. This is where I want to be at for the course of my career, and hopefully I can get out here and start well this week.
Well, you've made about a half dozen starts out there on the PGA Tour previously. Is it difficult to find reasonable expectations for yourself this week, given that you're surrounded by the best players in the world and there's $20 million at stake?
No, I feel like the Korn Ferry Tour having full status this year for the first time, I think I'm in a better headspace, and my skills have definitely gotten better. Those guys out there are so good, so being able to play out there and compete, I feel like that gets me ready for these opportunities, and hopefully I can play well this week and keep it going.
Willie, I know you played 18 yesterday. You also have the Charlotte Mayor, Will Lowry, there chatting with you from time to time. He's one third of the Beyond the Fairway podcast. What have you learned about the golf course that could help you come Thursday?
Yeah, actually, I played 9 holes with Quinn Riley yesterday and kind of came up on the last 3 or 4 holes with Max Homa. So it was kind of good to just see his perspective on the course. We talk a lot on Instagram, so just being able to come out here and play a few holes with him, one of the best players in the world, is a great opportunity for me to learn a little bit, and hopefully what he gave me out there on the course works this week.
It's been a fairly chaotic few days for you, Willie. The 27 holes in Alabama, six-hour drive, shoot 65 in the Monday qualifier, mm-hmm. and now you're out there playing practice rounds. Have you had time to consider what is a success for you this week?
I feel like no matter mini tour player or anybody out here, you want to come out here and compete and win. That's the goal, and hopefully whatever happens, I give it my all, and it turns out for the best. But I think nobody in this field thinks they can't win, and I'm going with the same attitude with this event, just like everything else.
Well, Willie, you're playing well. Go get it. Enjoy your week in Charlotte.
All right, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Back on golf today, the DP World Tour today confirmed it has received membership resignations from Sergio Garcia, Ian Poulter, Richard Bland, and Lee Westwood, who are sanctioned for serious breaches of the tour's conflicting tournament regulation committed last June. The DP World Tour, with this statement, confirmed has received membership resignations from Sergio Garcia, Ian Poulter, Richard Bland, and Lee Westwood, who were sanctioned for serious breaches of the tour's conflicting tournament regulation committed last June. The DP World Tour would like to take this opportunity to thank the four players for the contribution they have made to the tour, and in particular to Sergio, Ian, and Lee for the significant part they have played in Europe's success in the Ryder Cup over many years. The statement continues, their resignations, however, along with the sanctions imposed upon them, are a consequence of their own choices. As we have consistently maintained throughout the past year, the tour has a responsibility to its entire membership to administer the member regulations which each player signs up to. These regulations are in place to protect the collective interests of all DP World Tour members. Your reaction, Eamon, to this news?
Well, with that statement, the DP World Tour has shown more grace towards those four players than they got in return over the last almost year since the first live event outside of London, which is really where these sanctions date back to. And it bears noting, this is the consequence of the sports arbitration case that was litigated in the United Kingdom. And Lee Westwood and Ian Poulter, along with Patrick Reed, testified in person at that hearing. Back in February, clearly they were not persuasive to the judges in question, and that verdict that was issued can't be appealed. So it's now been made clear that the DP World Tour can sanction its players, which is again another thing that they were told by Greg Norman and his team that wouldn't happen. And it just becomes more and more apparent that the reality of what these guys now have on LIV is very far from what they were promised. At the outset, you know, there's no PGA Tour access. There's no DP World Tour access. There's no world ranking points. There's no Ryder Cup. There's no respect. There's really nothing that they're getting other than the cold, hard cash.
And Keith Pelley, who we spoke to, the head of the DP World Tour, called that a transcendent, landmark decision. Are we naive to think that at one point, Lee Westwood, Sergio Garcia, Ian Poulter in particular, would have done anything to represent Team Europe in the Ryder Cup, in perpetuity, if allowed, into their 50s, if they could, the thought went that biennial event meant so much. Are we naive to think that as golf observers and fans, or is cash king, or were they duped, as you say? Because I think they went eyes open, knowing that it was a possibility that event that had, we thought, imbued their hearts and souls was in jeopardy going forward.
It was certainly made clear, although it was limited how explicitly clear it could be made in terms of threats that you're never going to play Ryder Cup again, because a lot of it still had to be litigated. But these players certainly wouldn't have been under any illusion about the risk posed to a potential future Ryder Cup career captaincy for most of these players. Most of them were past the idea of actually playing as team members in the Ryder Cup. But they could not have been under any illusions about what the risk of that was. But, you know, money blinds folks out there. And if you listen to Greg Norman's guff, you make decisions that put you in positions like this where you lose a lot more than you've gained, at least in terms of reputation or stature in the game. And Westwood and Poulter in particular have been very pointed in their criticisms of the DP World Tour over the last few months taking it public with their criticisms of Keith Pelly, suggesting that he has somehow diminished the DP World Tour, that they would be much better off had they just taken Saudi money instead of a strategic alliance with the PGA Tour. The European Tour made a collective decision not to do what the Westwoods and Poulters thought they ought to have done. And those guys are very much now on the outside of the DP World Tour going forward.
It was a classy statement, I think, as you mentioned, bidding farewell to players who have given a lot to the European Ryder Cup. I feel like this is probably a victory for Luke Donald, the captain. It probably simplifies the process. It does not drag it out into the summer wondering who is available and who is not, who might be in that team room, who may not like so-and-so. Are you in agreement that this does simplify things in terms of who will occupy those all-important 12 spots?
Yeah, well, we had Tim Barter on the show earlier who said it was very unlikely that, for a mix of reasons, that any of the LIV guys would be chosen to be players. Also, the possibility of going forward in terms of backroom staff. Luke Donald has had winning relationships with some of these guys.
And Sergio, I still think Sergio was the one that John Rahm had gone to bat for, the all-time points leader. El Nino, he was the one that I thought might find his way into that back room.
And he might have believed that himself, but Sergio was also, by a mile, the most polarizing of all of the potential LIV guys, because no more infantile guy lives in professional golf. He's alienated so many people. Even Rob McIntyre, the defending champion this week in Italy, he has publicly tweeted about comments Sergio Garcia was shouting at his peers in a German locker room last summer. Sergio would have been an extraordinarily polarizing addition. So while John Rahm may have his national loyalty to him, the number of votes that would have been against Sergio Garcia being part of that team, I think would have voted John Rahm down pretty quickly.
Is this a good day for Team Europe? Looking ahead to the fall, as we look at Marco Simone Golf and Country Club this week, where a lot of the potential European players are playing while the Americans are here in Charlotte.
It's a sad day, though, isn't it? In a way, you've got standout careers in a Ryder Cup here, and they're ending in ignominy at this point. They deserved a better ending to careers than what we're seeing, but these endings are brought about, as that statement said, entirely by their own decisions. They made those decisions with wide open eyes, and these are the
consequences. They should have gone down with golf clubs in their hands, or at minimum with a walkie-talkie in their back pocket, and being a part of a franchise that had brought them joy and camaraderie. And instead, it's just a very, very odd way to say goodbye, you know, with a statement on a sheet of paper.
Well, it's the bank statement that really influences these decisions as well, Damon, right? Well, from guys who are obsessed with money, we're going to talk about one of the most talked about amateurs in the game, Michael Thorbjørnsen. He just won the Pac-12 championship, helped Stanford the team victory as well. He's kindly agreed to talk to the UCLA Bruin to my right here when we come back. Welcome back to Golf Today. The PGA Tour University rankings are giving playing opportunities to the game's top college seniors. At the conclusion of the NCAA Men's Individual Championship, the player in the top spot will be eligible for PGA Tour membership, while players finishing in the top five will earn Korn Ferry Tour membership. Players outside the top five will earn playing privileges on the PGA Tour's umbrella circuits. And let's take a look at the latest PGA Tour University rankings. Ludwig Åberg just not being displaced from that top spot, just ahead of Fred Biondi, the Florida Gator. Austin Greaser, who's in the field this week at the Wells Fargo Championship, are at the top of the totem pole. The rankings 11 through 20. Some friends of the show in here over the years as well. There's Ricky Castillo, another Florida Gator in there. Reed Davenport at number 14 from Vanderbilt.
So nice talk to these kids, Eamon, as they continue to get better. And speaking of which, a few days ago, Stanford's Michael Thorbjørnsen won the Pac-12 Individual Championship, becoming the 13th individual champ in program history and the first since old Mav McNeely in 2015. And Michael, I want to say, began the day two shots ahead of Colorado's Dylan McDermott in his 268 match. McDermott for a two-shot win at 15 under 265. 15 under was a career best. And you know, there's that line in Jaws, you're going to need a bigger boat. We're going to need a bigger bio at some point, because Michael continues to just stack it with accolades
an accomplishment and played in a couple of U.S. Opens. He even made the cut in the national championship, finished fourth at the Travelers a year ago. And great to have Michael with us on this Wednesday. So, Michael, you win the individual Pac-12, and the team wins as well. How would you describe that collective joy?
Oh, nothing beats it. It was truly amazing to be able to win both individually and as a team on our home course. I remember last year we came just short losing to Washington, but knowing that we're playing at home, we're all getting better, developing as players, and we felt really good going into the week, and it just feels amazing going into the postseason, coming off a win.
Michael, you used "we" a lot in that answer there. You talked about the team stuff a lot. You didn't say much about the individual title as well. Where does that rank for you?
Winning individually is great. Just shows that I'm doing the right thing. It's my second college win of the year and just of my career. And it definitely, yeah, again, feels great. But this is a team effort. And I mean, we push each other each and every day, both in the gym and on the course and in the classroom. So, yeah, again, going into NCAAs and into regionals, we're looking at it as a team effort, and we're all just trying to push each other to be the best that we can be.
Michael, I called Coach from Stanford, Conrad Ray, a few weeks back during the Valero Texas Open when Patrick Rogers was playing so well. What does Conrad do well to put this team in position to win as often as you do?
Conrad does a lot of great things. Coach is, I mean, he's a Hall of Famer, one of the best coaches in the business. I mean, he's one of the biggest reasons why I chose Stanford to play school here. And he's coached some of the best players in the world, won a couple national championships. So we're definitely trusting like what he does, and he knows what he's doing. So we follow suit. And yeah, I mean, we're definitely listening to him as much as we can.
Well, when you're a Stanford Cardinal, you're playing golf, you're racking up trophies at the pace you are, Michael, you start to find yourself getting compared quite often to another guy who was at your school a quarter century ago, Tiger Woods. Does that kind of comparison bother you at all, or does it actually inspire you?
It definitely doesn't bother me. I mean, whenever you're in the same conversation as the man, Tiger Woods, it's cool and it's an honor, but I mean, I'm my own person. I'm trying to do my own things and break my own records and achieve my own goals. But it's nice to know that I'm on the right track, and being compared to Tiger Woods, it feels really good.
Michael, speaking of your own goals, you have 13 points in this PGA Tour Accelerated, which gives points to highly gifted freshmen, sophomores, and juniors with some end-of-the-year accolades and continued great play. You could have the required 20, which would give you a pathway to the PGA Tour. What are you thinking? Senior year, big man on campus? Are you going to kind of hang and kind of, you know, enjoy your time at school, or going to go, you know, chase the PGA Tour? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of decisions are to be made this next year. I mean, if I were to get accelerated, that would be a huge bonus. I mean, I'd have to talk to some people, talk to coach to see if that's something that I would take this year. I've been looking at the points a little bit going into the regionals and NCAAs, and a lot needs to be done for me to be able to achieve that 20-point mark. But again, you can't really get lost in all the point systems and all that. You just got to focus on playing your best and just see what happens after that. As for next year, I'll most likely just come back and see where I place in PGA Tour U.
You've got another date on the calendar coming up, June 5th, Michael. That's golf's longest day. Last year, you qualified in a playoff for the U.S. Open at the Country Club. This year, you're going to play at Canoebrook, 36 holes on that day to try to make it to LA Country Club. What are your expectations this time around?
Again, just try and qualify. I remember last year, people are asking me what my plan is to play in certain tournaments, and I told them I'm going to play in the U.S. Open. I'm just assuming that I'm going to qualify, and that's kind of the same mentality that I'm going in with this year as well. I know my game's in a good spot, and if I'm playing well, I don't think there are many players that can beat me. So I feel confident in my game and just excited for that longest day in golf. Yeah.
Michael, college is a great time to develop a nickname. I was D-Hack or Hack Attack. Do you have a nickname at all that you gained while you were at Stanford?
I guess just like starting in junior golf. I mean, my last name's Thor Bjornsson. We got Thor in there. I have a couple Thor hammer stamp marks on my wedges and a head cover. So it's pretty cool. I think it kind of resembles how I drive the ball. Drive it pretty far, pretty straight. Yeah, it's definitely a cool nickname.
Well, you dropped the hammer on the rest of the Pac-12. Congratulations on the individual and team title, and best of luck in qualifying. We'll speak to you soon.
Thank you very much. Take care, guys.